It must have been heartbreaking to see that footage coming out from Beirut. What is the latest, sort of in brief, what's the latest situation on the ground?
Well, everyone's kicked into gear in terms of cleaning up the mess, whether that's, you know, still finding people buried under the rubble, whether it's cleaning up people's homes, the streets. I mean, it's just, you know, I've seen photos and it's just like an apocalyptic world. Interestingly, though, there's been a complete absence of the government. I mean, it's just people and neighbours and solidarity from just ordinary people and folks in the street just picking up brooms and just sweeping away. It's just, on the one hand, it's heartening because you're seeing this solidarity on a community level, but on the other hand, it's kind of just, you know, exemplifies the whole problem with the fact that even in a time of crisis, the government is just nowhere to be seen.
You yourself and your family, what is your connection to Lebanon?
I was born in Australia, born and raised, but my folks moved here in the 70s, in the early stages of the Civil War. You know, they came here with their own stories of heartbreak and sadness, and I was brought up with that. You know, my parents' generation is a Civil War generation, so, you know, my grandfather on my mother's side was killed in the Civil War a year before she migrated to Australia. There's been, you know, the stories of pain have just always been there. In a way, it kind of prepares you as a Lebanese person growing up for the pain that you're going to kind of have to endure with this country. But at the same time, it also exhausts you because just like at one point does this all just stop and get better?
Well, speaking of that kind of exhaustion, I think that is very much a factor in what we're seeing here now in Beirut. I mean, we've had, as I say, COVID-19. We might not necessarily have watched the situation in Lebanon specifically around COVID-19, but obviously it's not been great within the country. They've been handling this terrible economic downturn, and now this latest, it's sort of saying it's a very big straw, but it's certainly a great big straw that breaks the camel's back.
Right, it's like a cherry on top of a cherry. So in Australia, we're fortunate in the fact that I say fortunate, people are struggling. Yeah, I'm in Melbourne in lockdown, and you know, people are losing their jobs and are sick. But I mean, you know, all of our resources and our attention are devoted to addressing coronavirus. Whereas in a country like Lebanon, you have you know, the economic turmoil, the economy of Lebanon's collapsed completely. You've got half the population in poverty. You've got people who can't access their money because the banks have imposed capital control, so you can't withdraw dollars. The currency is depreciated by 80%, so you can't even afford anything. So people are hungry, people are starving, people are out of jobs. On top of that, you get coronavirus. And then on top of that, you get this blast. So people's homes and the city has been obliterated. I mean, it's just one thing. I mean, where do you even begin to clean up the mess in Lebanon? What do you even focus on first? You know, I was actually just on a call right now with diaspora activists in the U.S., Lebanese diaspora, and we're talking about, you know, what do we send? Do we send medical supplies so they can address, you know, the needs right now of people injured and helping? Or do we send PPE so no one gets coronavirus while they're out there sweeping the streets? Like, that was actually a conversation we just had. So it's, I don't know, which one do you start with first? It's just one disaster after another.
And going forward with that situation you mentioned there before, I mean, obviously the solidarity amongst the people out there helping, sweeping the streets, searching for survivors in the rubble is absolutely extraordinary. I understand the government has some of the people from around the docks currently in custody, looking ahead to press charges on them. But can the Lebanese government really survive this kind of turmoil if they're seen to be basically doing nothing, having created this situation, and then really doing nothing in the aftermath? Can they really go forward in that situation?
The next few weeks are going to be telling. So at the moment, the entire Lebanese political class, which consists of the government and pretty much parliament and all the political actors, have zero legitimacy in the country among the people. And they also have zero legitimacy internationally. You saw the French president there today pretty much berating them. I'd be interested to see how the next few weeks pan out. You know, once kind of like the health situation somewhat stabilizes, some, you know, and food aid and the international aid becomes more apparent, you know, where will the attention turn amongst people who are angry? So it's not going to be, I don't foresee an easy path out of this. You know, just to put into context, we had 15 years of civil war and the damage that inflicted on the city, the physical damage, you know, destroyed buildings and so forth. That was done in a matter of minutes. And we didn't even rebuild Beirut properly the last time in 1990. I mean, so who's going to rebuild the country now when the city now with no money, the economy in ruins? No international government wants to give money to Lebanon, including the Australian government. You know, they announced $2 million in aid, but that's going to go to the World Food Program and the Red Cross. And the reason is because the government is wholly corrupt. But on the other hand, you still need the government to actually lead reconstruction efforts. So I don't even know where to begin. And that's where we are at the moment. Like, people in the country, like, where do we begin? Do we begin with trying to repair, or do we begin, or does repair consist of fighting this political class and doing whatever we possibly can to get rid of them, whether that includes, and so that's another conversation we're having in the diaspora, you know, what can countries like Australia and France and the US, countries that have special relationships with Lebanon by virtue of the diaspora communities, as well as by their just involvement in the country, you know, what can they do? Can they maybe freeze the assets of some of these political leaders that are in French banks and American banks and probably in Australia as well, because there's a big community here? So, I mean, they're the kind of things we need to start looking at beyond just getting aid. What can we do to remove this political class? Because there's no way, there's just no future unless this class, these elites who've gobbled up the wealth. And when I talk about the elites, because then I'm talking to an audience that might not be familiar with the Lebanese political context, essentially, the warlords who fought that civil war in the 70s and 80s are the ones who run the country now. So it's the people who've destroyed the country already and destroyed it again. So these are the options that I think that are in front of the Lebanese people right now.
We are almost, we're still, after all, very, very close to this inciting incident, such as it were, but obviously a great deal of the potential for change and change to be made in the country, if at all possible. A great deal of healing to be done. And Tun, do appreciate your time. Thanks very much for joining us this morning.